You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Podcast Network. Find all of our shows at WeAreLibertarians.com.
All right, let's get back to some boring subjects.
Understand the risk to our country.
Freedom brings people together.
You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Network. Learn more at WeAreLibertarians.com.
Hey, welcome to the program. Today we are talking about breast milk, and I'm going to be totally mature about it. We're going to talk about why there's a shortage and how it impacts people. And, you know, the thing I love about We Are Libertarians is we've got so many contributors that when issues come up, it's not because they're experts, it's just they're like real people living lives and can give us an insight into what's going on in families. So Sarah Brady's here. Trisha Stewart Mann is here. And my wife, Reagan, is here, who I have I've inspected, does have mammary glands. So we'll give you all the, well, not all the details right after this message.
Leadership, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starfleet Leadership Academy, its ongoing mission to develop leaders through Star Trek, to boldly go where no podcast has gone before. A leadership development podcast told through the lens of Star Trek. The Starfleet Leadership Academy. Available everywhere you listen to podcasts.
Warning. This show is for adults by semi-adults. So the language is sometimes strong and offensive.
I don't know what I said.
Welcome to the Chris Spangle Show. Our goal is to help you sound smarter while talking to your friends. If you struggle to understand politics, we explain it from an independent libertarian point of view. With all of the irreverence it deserves, we toss out the screaming heads, put people before political parties, and give context to the news to make you think. Now, here's our host, Chris Spangle, a 15-year veteran of politics and media.
Thanks for joining us here on the Chris Spangle Show. Again, I'm Chris Spangle. Now, before we start, we want to thank all the members of Wall Plus, which is what we call our Patreon. You're the reason the show and this entire network of all of our shows, including Gingerarchy, hosted by our own Trisha Stewart Mann. You can join wallplus.com and get all the great benefits. I did stand-up for the second time in my life. I've never done more than 3 minutes. I did 17 minutes. So did I do well or did I bomb? Go and listen to that bonus episode right now at $5 or above. We give lots of bonus shows, 3 to 4 a month, and patrons can access ad-free shows and the complete archives, and you'll be supporting a great podcast, just the best podcast that, the second best podcast I do. Thank you especially to our $100 a month members, Vincent Peichel, Lars Nordskog, Jake Edel, Matthew Durbin, Reinhold, Christy Avery, and Jason Doolittle. Thank you to everybody who supports us on Patreon. Now, I don't typically actually get mad about news stories, but this one has bugged me a lot. And so I really wanted to do an episode on the baby formula shortage. Reagan is here. I met my stepdaughter, when she was like 2.5 months. And then we started dating a little while after that. And I was around for breastfeeding and saw what an enormous pain in the butt it is. It is more complicated to be, you know, I haven't lived with a woman in a long time. And now that I live with one again, I'm like, oh my God, women have so much crap to deal with. It's so much harder than being the other night. She's like, you literally just walk in and then go to bed. And then you're in there for like an hour putting on creams.
At least
and
30 minutes.
Essential oils.
You have to exfoliate the creams.
Yep. I don't do anything. I don't even wash my face.
He doesn't.
I don't. And so, you know, I think when people say, oh, why don't you just breastfeed? We're not going to, you know, some of you are being a jerk, but we want to definitely answer that question. Why that's not an option for everybody, because it is difficult. And I, despite the appearance in this black t-shirt, do not have mammary glands and don't have any insight into what with formula. So we have three moms here. We are strategically recording this. We have coordinated nap times, more or less. Poor Squish had to go down at 12:30 when she usually goes down at 2-ish.
Three?
She has
three.
Like,
I mean,
She's asleep, though, because I kept you have to leave the door cracked and go, I'm going to check and make sure you're not playing with your toys. But Trisha Stewart, man, how old is your baby?
Myra, my youngest, is 17 months.
How old's your oldest?
She will be 18 on June 17th.
And she just did what?
She just graduated with honors on Saturday, and she will be heading to the College of Worcester this fall. I believe she has close to $60,000 in grants and scholarships
a year. Congratulations. Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay.
It's kind of cool to see, you know, the graduation pictures with you and your oldest who's graduating high school, and then your little baby Myra.
She's your little sister. Yeah. Kind of. I did a lot of this.
So it's cute. And are you breastfeeding formula? Are you
She's in the toddler stage. So we're doing toddler milk. With Myra, I started trying to exclusively breastfeed and had to, for a lot of reasons, go breast milk and formula. A lot of people on each side are kind of against that. Hmm. I found being a little older than 29, I did what was best for me and my family, and my husband was completely supportive. So I was able to supplement where I couldn't give and still be able to breastfeed her. So,
and then Sarah Brady, who has been a co-host guest, you did some video work for us, and you are a, well, what was your most, like, you've worked in the libertarian professional space, I guess is the way to put it, for a long time. And you also worked as a nanny. And you know more about children than anybody I know. It maybe rivals Reagan, who had 10 younger brothers and sisters and helped basically co-parent. but you know, you have a lot of insight here, but you also are a new mom. So tell us about your kid.
Yes. I also have a 5.5 month old right now. And we actually, this is a topic that's near and dear to us because in the middle of this delightful shortage is also when it became necessary for us to wean. So I initially did breastfeed. We had just exclusive nursing for the first 10 weeks. And we had so many issues with his latch, where we were causing, like, it was really painful. It got to a point where I had just decided that I couldn't keep doing this because I would, like, wince and seize up just starting to feed him. And doing that 8 to 10 times a day, it's really exhausting and it's really hard. So we switched to pumping for the last 4 months now, but we are done with that because we've also had experienced mastitis, which is an infection that you can get when you're breastfeeding. I've had it 4 times in the last 5 months. And after the third time, my doctor said, if it happens again, you really should just stop breastfeeding. Cause it's just, it's not worth it at that. It's not worth it at that point. Just the pain that it's causing for everyone. But it was really emotional to have that decision of switching over to formula, especially in the middle of this formula shortage. We made sure to save up. We found 2 months worth of formula before we even considered starting over. So that's how kind of dire the situation is that it was really a question of, should I just continue to put up with constant infections, or could we switch to formula? Which one would be easier?
Is that what you had?
Yes, I've had that a couple times.
Yeah, and you breastfed for how long? Because she's three and a half.
2 years.
Yeah.
And she also had a tongue tie, which made it very painful at the very beginning. But because of my situation as a single mom, it was difficult to get some of that stuff.
Yeah, to afford the
fixed.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I just had to deal with the pain. And
what
the
is a tongue tie? I don't think a lot of people know what that is.
Men. So tongue tie is basically, I don't even know the correct term for it, but where, just think, you can't stick your tongue out. Baby can't stick their tongue out. They can't latch on.
It's that thing underneath your tongue. Yeah. Myra had it. We had it clipped.
Yeah.
The whole thing that connects the bottom to the top.
Yeah. And when that happens, they normally cannot get a good latch, which affects, one, how much the baby's consuming, and then it in turn affects how much the mom is producing, can end up being a downward cycle. And if you end up engorged, so too much milk there, you could end up with mastitis, all those things. And
because when you breastfeed, you can't just like leave it in there for a while.
No,
that's how you get mastitis.
It hurts.
You went
so
to the
much.
Hospital, didn't you?
No, I at that time, what was that, during COVID when I got it?
Yeah.
I think I wasn't really able to go to the hospital. So I just laid in bed for a couple of days, waited for death.
I did end up going to the hospital for my third time. So it's not a joke.
It's not. You can do a warm compress and different things like that. But it's just, once you get the clog out, it feels better. But
I've never had mastitis, but I've been pretty far engorged where one side wasn't producing the same or what, and I couldn't only pump one the same. And so it feels kind of like acupuncture with that largest gauge needle in 15 different places constantly on you.
Oh.
It is constant. It's like, or if you get really painful when your feet fall asleep and it feels like needles, it's like that, only worse right here all the time.
And you had that where one side was different than the other. So you kind of didn't have enough sometimes because the right would produce more and then the left would be dry and you couldn't eat it. It's all, it was like you thought about it all the time.
Breastfeeding is weird because what you start out with isn't always what you're going to have, and it can go either way. And for me, it was a constant roller coaster of what I was producing, what I wasn't producing. Normally speaking, I mean, my doctor would say this, that, oh, well, your body can produce what the baby is going to need. And for me, that thankfully was the case, but there were some weeks even where I was super stressed or I'd get sick or I'd be on a medication, and those put up barriers to what your body actually can do. So I did more baby led weaning where she could eat some extra things as well as breastfeeding. So that did help.
Yeah. What has your experience has been like, Sarah, Tricia?
Just that there's just so much that goes on, especially for like the first 12 weeks. Cause like Reagan was saying, it's kind of a learning curve and there's a process, and it's different with every pregnancy, at least I'm told. So you can have a really successful time breastfeeding with one child and then have a really hard time with the next. And it is something that is kind of like always on your mind. Because even if it doesn't necessarily take up a ton of minutes at like actively breastfeeding, especially if you're able to nurse, if you've got a good, you know, efficient baby, you can be done in like 10, 15 minutes easy. You have to constantly be aware of like, you're more hungry because you're breastfeeding. You're really conscious of what they're eating. If you have babies who are sensitive to like milk or eggs, some women have to completely cut entire food groups out of their diet. But
why is that?
It's just something that's constant. So if the babies are sensitive, this is a thing that actually applies to formula too. Some babies are lactose intolerant. Sometimes they're intolerant to dairy in general. Some are sensitive to soy, but anything that mom eats comes out in the milk. Your milk is basically just filtered blood. So anything that you eat, any drugs that you take, at least come through in part in your milk. And babies,
Sarah's got a little bit of an internet problem.
They're sensitive. You sometimes have to figure out what it is.
Yeah, Sarah's got a little bit of a problem. We got an internet issue, so she's going to mute her video. But that should hopefully help fix it. But just be patient with the pauses.
If I could add on to what Sarah's saying too. So a lot of, you know, times, and I think that if there's a possible way for you to breastfeed, you should absolutely try it. Like, I'm not one of those that's like, don't bother with it. Cause you're going to hate it, because there are women just like anything else in life that just, you know, you always get a little bit of a rough start, but then it just goes really well and it's perfectly meant to be. And a lot of people point to historically how, well, that's what women did. So why all of a sudden, and that's actually not true. 15% of children growing up did not get enough. And so there were some solutions. Sometimes you did have wet nurses. And I know that there's, you know, some cool new free market solutions for breast milk donations and stuff. That's not really feasible for a lot of people. And then you are also relying on the fact that somebody's not doing a certain type of drug. They're not. And then if you want really fancy kinds that get tested, well, then you're paying like five times more than formula.
Yeah.
So, you know, unless you got a neighbor who's got some boobs that she just wants to come over five times a day and lend you. Which Chris, don't make me
joke. You want to go like around the neighborhood and start?
You know, we were actually
$4 an ounce last time I checked.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah, it is.
How much does a baby drink in ounces a day, would you say?
Oh, God. Alex ate like 36 ounces a day.
Oh, that's a lot of money. That's
more than
filling up your gas tank every day.
Yeah. We were actually really lucky that the first time I had mastitis, one of the things that comes along with that is not only are you painful and engorged and you've got all this milk and you have to get it out because that's how you clear the infection. But you also make less because you're all swollen and infected. So I had, and I actually had another mother who I was lucky enough that I'm worked within the nanny industry. So I have a lot of connections with people who have small children. And one mom, a friend of mine was just asking for, if she had any tips for me to be able to increase my milk supply so that I could make sure I was giving him enough. Cause I really, really didn't want to feed him formula, especially early on. I had a mother who just offered, she goes, well, would you like some milk? And she gave me like 200 ounces of milk because she was an overproducer. She had like 1,000 ounces in her freezer. So when she heard, well, there's a baby that doesn't have enough milk, that was her first thought was, well, I have extra milk. Would you like some? And it's cool that now, because pretty much everybody who breastfeeds has a pump, that's actually one thing that the Affordable Care Act did was requires all health insurance has to cover breast pumps.
I'd like some breast insurance, please. Trisha, can you add that to your roster along with life insurance?
Yeah, I'm going to start selling that as supplemental. But that
I would do your materials, but it'd take me 3 weeks to design it.
But you know, that's the modern thing now is instead of having to find somebody who would nurse your child, you can find somebody who's got 1,000 extra ounces in their freezer and wants to share.
And if you are, you know, somebody that doesn't have a friend like that and you're not knowing exactly the source, then they do have, it costs more money. Hopefully, maybe one day the market can make that smaller, but you can get it tested. You know what I mean? And so that it's as safe as could possibly be. But the one cool thing about everything that we've done, instead of soaking bread in water and trying to shove it down a newborn's throat to get them to swallow it like a feeding tube for those 15% of babies that had failure to thrive, we have formula, which is the next best thing to breast milk.
Yeah. So is that what happened? Why do you all prefer breast milk over formula? Maybe this is a good place to explain what formula is, when it was invented. You know, why is it different than breast milk? I know I think I was formula fed. My mom said when I was a kid in 1983, like that's what everybody did. You just, they kind of told you not to breastfeed and use the formula. Now it's really like make your own choice. Which seems much more rational to me. But what is formula? When did it get invented? Like, give us details on all that stuff and why you guys chose a hybrid or just exclusively why you never really used it. Trisha,
I can speak a little bit about the history. Yeah, Sarah probably knows it, the names better than I do. I just know the overarching story.
All right, Sarah, you go first, and then Reagan and Trisha can fill in.
Okay. Well, the baby formula has been around in one version or another. I'm sure we've all seen a meme posted by one of our parents at some point about the recipe for formula that involves like Karo syrup and goat's milk, Karo syrup and evaporated milk and formula vitamin drops. But formula has been around in one form or another since about the 1850s. Our modern version of formula, though, is the whole goal is to mimic breast milk. So the idea is that human milk is different from other kinds of milk, only that it has like more carbohydrates. It's got high sugar. It's kind of I've heard it described as it's kind of like a sugar water or like a cereal milk, but it's really high in carbs. So we have various ways that we try to alter other animals' milk in order to make it more similar to human milk. And those are what we call baby formulas. They're just formulations of food that babies can be able to take. But the reason that they need those that young is because baby guts can't handle real food, especially under the age of about 4 months. Because I mentioned before that milk is basically filtered blood. One of the things about infant guts is they're what we call open and kind of leaky. So a lot of what infants eat in the first 4 months can actually diffuse straight into their blood. It's one reason why a lot of breastfed babies can go days without pooping sometimes because they're just absorbing and using everything as efficiently as possible. But that challenge to be able to produce something that's not human milk that is safe enough for it to essentially risk being diffused into the bloodstream is why it's so important that we have these high standards for formula, especially in those first 4 months.
That's really interesting. Yeah, because I didn't even know until, you know, meeting Reagan and Eleonora, that you can't even give a baby water, Tricia.
They don't. I mean, it's not going to kill them if you give them a little, but they do not suggest it. And then some people used to use sugar water when the baby wouldn't poop, which they found out. I mean, obviously plenty of babies survived that, but that's another poor alternative to what actually, you know, could be.
There's a lot of that going around.
Breast milk or, you know, formulated formula, which.
Well, I did it. My pappy did it in 1950.
Right.
And grandma fed me green beans at 3 months.
And they gave babies bread soaked in water. And that's why like 15% of them died of childhood diseases.
Wow. What was the correlation there?
I think a lot of it was failure to thrive. I don't know how many studies have been done, but I watched a documentary about like the history of like infants, like breastfeeding and things like that. It was only like 25 minutes, but it was really interesting to see the way it's grown and how formula has actually saved a lot of lives, even in like third world countries where it gets donated.
So why did you choose to breastfeed over formula? Are most moms starting to kind of think that way? Like, I'm going to try this, and then if it doesn't work, go to formula, as opposed to the way my mom did it?
Well, I can... Reagan?
I think. I know. Well, no, you hop in on this too, but I remember distinctly my grandmother talking to me about breastfeeding, and she said that it wasn't encouraged at her period because formula was almost considered like, this is better than breast milk. For a while in American history. And I'm sure a lot of that had to go into women going back to work and doing all these different things. And obviously breastfeeding is taxing.
Like that attitude of like stovetop and Kraft macaroni and cheese are better food than making,
it was the TV dinner of.
Right. It's also a big part of women's liberation was that a lot of the housework, and in this case, literally the work of feeding your child, technology is able to make easier, make faster, or make automated. It used to be that women spent all their time at home feeding the babies and washing the dishes and washing the clothes. And we have machines for all of those things now.
Yeah.
So Sarah, is that why I see so many of those guys posting just breastfeed?
Oh, they have no idea how much work it takes.
Yeah. It takes what? It's 1900.
It's 35. It's 35 hours a week on average, which is different for different women. And then laundry before the invention of the laundry machine was 25 hours a week for a family of four.
1900 hours in a year for full time breastfeeding.
The best way ever to put it is
900 hours breastfeeding.
So technology is feminist.
Really, it is. I mean, the free market has done so much. The reason that women are able to participate in the workforce is because a lot of this work that we assume is women's work, it'd be great if the way that feminism worked is that men just decided to share all of that workload too, but it's not. What happened is men were like, maybe we can build a machine that'll do that instead.
Tricia, this makes sense why so many libertarian podcasters on that side read Ted Kaczynski. That's all I'm going to say.
I like to Sarah's point, though, the funny thing is that, it has liberated women and with the Industrial Revolution came women not just being consumers or producers in their homestead, but outside of the home. There's a lot of argument for or against that. And then just like your wife said, like my mom breastfed my sister because La Leche was huge back then. My sister's about 4 years older than me. When I came around, she bottle fed me. And so it does have a lot to do with culture, but I find it so funny that these people say just breastfeed. And I think it should be encouraged and not, made to be something off or scary. I actually formula fed exclusively my first child because I was 23 and stupid. Not that people that do that, but I just didn't even try because, I didn't know what I was doing. The person that I was married to at the time wasn't supportive of breastfeeding. So it didn't really, make any sense to me. And I since got older and learned better and was able to tackle things like tongue tie on my own, which, institutions don't help you tackle that, which helped me breastfeed. And I had a husband who was just supportive and was like, whatever works best for us and let's try. I'll do whatever you need to do to get us there.
Let's talk about the men because we are all in Reformed Moms groups. And we're going to do a show about these. But, when it comes to some of the stuff that, the three of you have supportive partners, Reagan, especially, she's just thanks every day for me. But, when you look at some of your peers' experiences, like talk to the men about how important it is, you know, in all of these processes, like to give support? Because I didn't know anything and I still kind of don't, which is why you guys are here. You ladies are here, excuse me. But, you know, if there's more men listening than women to this podcast. So I guess kind of what does it mean to you if somebody is supportive? Trisha, you go first.
For me,
what does that look like?
It looks like my husband, but for me, it means the world to me because it means, you know, I also suffered for something which is actually connected to breastfeeding, postpartum anxiety, pretty severely. And a lot of times breastfeeding helps with that, but then if you have a difficult time, it actually feeds into it. So having somebody there to help you balance and figure things out and tell you that what you're doing is important and ultimately look out for your best interests and their child's best interests. That benefits the father tremendously, or whatever partner you have. Know that, you know, if that person is, well, you know, mentally, if that person isn't completely exhausted, they're going to be a better parent to that child. And so the best thing you can do is not yell and scream at them, because I will tell you, the more somebody yells at you to breastfeed and the more somebody tells you, why aren't you producing, the less you'll produce. That's actually a physical fact. And so it means a whole lot, just in a lot of ways. And, you know, I wish I had tried with my first daughter, but I'm glad that I had that knowledge being older now, because I'm able to stand up for myself and for what other women need. And he's completely supportive of me. So it's awesome.
Sarah, go ahead.
My partner has been amazingly supportive with breastfeeding, but I think a lot of that is making sure that you communicate with each other, why you're doing it and what the value there is, so that you can have somebody who's also looking out for you. Because breastfeeding is, I'm not sure it's something that guys could ever really truly empathize with, because it's something that you're trying to make your body do, but that you don't have much control over your body in the process. So, you know, you can always exercise more if you're trying to, you know, achieve some great physical feat, but you can't exercise your way to more milk. You know, you can try and eat more oatmeal. You can, you know, try to relax and drink tons of water. But at the end of the day, it's you're kind of struggling with your own body to be able to do something that for a lot of women it's critically important. And it's something that sometimes, you know, we stake our identities on it, or our ability to be a good mother is on your ability to be able to feed your child. So a supportive partner really is one that looks and understands that struggle that you're going through, but also is there to look out for, you know, like Trisha said, your mental health and the health of your child. I mentioned earlier that Alex eats 36 ounces a day. Sometimes he eats 40 ounces a day. When he was fully breastfed. Right. So for a lot of the time that I was nursing him, I was in tears sometimes because he would be hungry. And I'm like, I can't make more milk. I think 25 ounces is an average amount to make per day. So he was like 1.5 babies on some days. So it was really helpful that my partner, you know, saw that happening and then talked about like, okay, talk to me through the line of how far do we push this to make sure that he gets milk? And if that's really important to us, then making sure that we get donor milk, but also fed is best is the term. I know a lot of people have heard breast is best, and that's true because there's a lot of things that we haven't been able to mimic perfectly in formula. Just kind of, you know, the magical human element, or even the simple things like antibodies that you produce as a mother go into your milk. And that's not something that we have a way of producing in formula. So when you're exposed to different viruses or germs, you will actually provide protective mechanism through your milk to your child.
Go ahead, Sarah.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to kick it to Reagan. I mean, so I want you to finish any point you had.
Just that, you know, for me, it was him actually convincing me that it's okay to give him, you know, a bottle of formula at the end of the day, and make sure that I am not trying to make everything for him if he needs more than I'm able to do. But at the same time, respecting why I want to be able to provide him with breast milk, and knowing it's really frustrating to have a partner who's like, well, why don't you just feed him formula? Maybe you just can't feed him. That's not supportive at all. But having someone who sits you down and says, hey, I see you're really struggling. I think it'll be okay if we give him one bottle. How would you feel about that? Is a much more helpful way to do that.
Yeah, just a little bit of humility to know that you don't totally know, but, you know, at least giving. And I know our situation is different because you may be able to speak more from the single mom perspective, because I mean, we were talking, but I wasn't around until, you know, well into things. But what do you want to add?
Oh, goodness. They've basically touched on all the points. I know you asked earlier why I chose breastfeeding over formula, but Sarah just talked on those points. But the human element that our bodies produce, and I think even for men listening to this, like maybe having doubts on breastfeeding or formula, educate yourself. There are so many like peer-reviewed studies, y'all, on the internet that you can look at. And once you educate yourself, just don't lash out on your partner or one way or the other. Being supportive is being educated, but not putting guilt or blame on the other person, especially since it's something that we usually cannot control. But men, you can control your actions and your mood, because that does actually have an effect on what women are able to produce. Anxiety and mood takes a huge place in that. But stem cells, all those things that are inside of breast milk that they have not been able to perfectly put into formula, those are huge reasons I ended up doing what I ended up doing.
Yeah, you said that the breast milk changes based on what the child needs. Like your body changes to their body?
Yeah, so if she's sick or I'm sick, my milk would actually change to a bluish color. And that's usually because of antibodies. And would change a variety of different colors within white, cream, blue, all those things. And it's antibodies helping.
I just love that you're so sweet. You told men to go research boobs and said, look up peer-reviewed studies. It's just...
There are so many.
they do have an actual function, and you can learn all about it.
I learned so much more about boobs from her. I just, you know, it was amazing. I just like, oh, it does that? I didn't know that.
Well, you know what? I think from a guy's perspective, being a guy with a partner who is breastfeeding, you end up with a completely different relationship with boobs. I think my favorite joke that I've heard to compare it to is that if you're a guy in a house with a woman who's breastfeeding, you treat those breasts kind of like the way that you treat a dog at the airport, that you might want to really engage, but no, you need to step away because that dog is working. Those boobs are working boobs right now.
They're working boobs, and they will squirt you. They will get you right in the face.
Hey, there's a whole group of people that are into that. I'm just saying.
It's true. Sarah said
it tastes like cereal milk, so I'm hoping, you know, next baby.
Some
crunch.
Hey, there's a reason there's people into it, man.
Yeah. So we've kind of talked about the important part here, and now let's hate the government. So, Sarah, why don't you tell us a little bit about why we are having a breast milk? Like, it's all fun and games when it's toilet paper, you know, like you can kind of just, you know, go grab some leaves or something. But this is so not funny and so scary having watched Reagan go through it and, you know, you're going through it. It just how does it feel to see shortages? And then why don't you start at the beginning and tell us how this happened?
Well, I mean, it's really stressful. Like I've made a point of, I used to go to Walmart like once a month, and now I'm going every week just so that I can see if there's formula in the formula aisle and see if I can grab a can while we're there. And there hasn't been. And it's like, I know that I'm not low on formula, but that uncomfortable feeling of like, but I hope that I don't get low before it comes back. It's not great. And I'm lucky enough that Alex is my son. He's not that sensitive. So if need be, we could switch formulas, but that is not an option for a lot of parents. And that's a big part of the problem with the shortage is that it impacted some of the hypoallergenic and like specialty formulas for those sensitive babies that I was talking about before. You know, sometimes mom has to cut out dairy, but when you have to go to formula, then you have to have, you know, a special, even more expensive dairy-free formula for those babies. So what happened is it's kind of a story of market consolidation on one end, but then you come to government. In this case, it wasn't so much government caused the problem, but government's done a great job of making it harder to solve. So what happened was actually there was a voluntary recall at the Similac plant. There were two babies who ended up actually dying from contaminated formula. And so Similac is one of, I think, three producers in the United States that produce, I think, 98% of our baby formula. it's three or four producers produce 98% of our formula. And Similac owns about a third of the market in that case. They recalled almost all of their stock of three really popular brands that they had. So Pro Advance, which was actually what my son was on, and then Nutramigen and one other sensitive formula. So you had a market that was doing okay for a while, now suddenly has a quarter of the supply of formula just taken out of the market that can't be sold to babies anymore. Anybody, if you have, I know it was interesting because pretty much all the sample cans that they had sent out during that time were recalled. So you had to even throw away the little small sample cans that you have. And it really is scary because actually being able to point to a couple of babies that have died is enough to make anybody say, okay, well, I'm not taking that risk.
Yeah. So just to give a few facts and figures here, based on some of my research, the shortage is the retailers nationwide reported supplies of baby formula were out of stock at a rate of 43% during the week that ended in May 8th, compared with less than 5% in the first half of 2021. In some states, such as Texas and Tennessee, the shortages were over 50%. The FDA and Similac maker Abbott Labs, have reached a deal to reopen the formula factory in Sturgis, Michigan, which is desperate news, great news for desperate parents. Joe Biden has and we can talk about some of the political ramifications of all this, but the Defense Production Act, which was talked so often about during the Trump years for ventilators. And everybody said, no, this isn't a good idea. Let's not do that because then we'll start doing it all the time, was invoked to get supply chains back. And that basically says to every supplier to Abbott Labs and Similac and some of the other formula makers that any orders that you have, you are not to ship out. All that stock and inventory now is property of these formula makers. And then also they are now starting to import European formula, which brings more choice in because places like Germany have higher standards. They don't use like corn syrup in European formulas. There has been high tariffs, if not bans, on several different formulas. Those are now, I think it was a ton of baby formula. I don't remember the number landed in Indianapolis today, actually, to start giving some of the relief. Now, the FDA actually inspected that plant, Tricia, the week that the bad batches were made, found nothing, left, the batches were sent out, and then when it was brought to the FDA's attention, it took a whistleblower, basically, to get the FDA to act, as I understand it. Please correct me if I'm wrong, anyone that knows, but that seems like a bad look for the FDA.
Well, that wouldn't be the first time. So there's two different sides of this. And obviously what I generally think is it's probably somewhere in the middle. So going back and looking, they were saying there was no issue. Obviously the FDA is not really doing due diligence. And why would they? Because they're, a monopolized force. So they don't particularly have, I wouldn't say that what's driving their force is the customer's best interest, because government doesn't have customers, but, regardless, there should be some process for this. Now, what was found independently and privately also, and of course, some of this could come from, the producers themselves, that those weren't actually linked to the factories and that they've been cleared and they've yet not been able to open. So we're not even quite sure if those two bacteria actually came from there. It's really inconclusive. And of course, it's tragic. If that was my child, I would be like, burn the place down, because that would just be my, but so they haven't been able to reopen and produce, but then there's also this monopoly that the government has. So if you go to Mexico, which by the way, anybody, there's some great formula there that would be FDA approved if it were here. So if you need some, you just hit my messages.
No, they're confiscating it. The Wall Street Journal.
Their stocks are shelved, and Mexico doesn't have. They can do whatever they want.
Scott Linscombe in the Wall Street Journal had an article yesterday that they're confiscating formula that people are trying to bring from Mexico back to the United States.
There's other ways, if you're like an agorist, that you know how to get it here. But and then also the ban on being able, like I think it was like 6 years ago, you can't buy Canadian formula. And if you honestly think that the Canadians are buying subpar formula than the Americans, and that's completely the reason why there's a ban on it, then you know, I have a bridge somewhere to sell you. And the same thing with European. There's so many ways, like we should have a larger market. And these small American companies have this huge, like 90% market share, and we're not able to buy anything else. That's ridiculous.
Which means that they have overdue. They have a lot of influence with the FDA and who can bring in competition and not. But
right. And I'm not saying every, you know, thing like, you know, oh, put this goat's milk with this and that. But, you know, if it comes from trusted sources and you've reviewed it, you know, a family member and you're researching it, you don't need the government to tell you not to do that when your baby's hungry. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just, it's not their place to tell you that.
Sarah, weigh in. And I'm sure you have something to add here.
Oh, just that there. Well, one of the things is with the overseas formulas, I've actually had a few families that I've worked with who use European formulas prior to this whole being an issue. But the government has been blocking people importing those now because the law says that they can't resell them in the United States unless they've been tested and approved by FDA standards. So they are now having issues with, like, if you're buying too much formula, it's assumed that you're buying them for resale. And so they get blocked at customs. So you have kids who, like, wouldn't even otherwise be affected by this shortage because they were using a European formula to start with, now have a harder time getting their European formula because the government is stepping in and being like, no, you can't use European formula to solve this crisis. But it's the shortage itself is both caused by, you got the problem with the plant. It's kind of weird because they did a voluntary recall and then afterwards the FDA came in and was like, oh, but by the way, we're closing your plant.
We did the right thing, but
yeah. So there are definitely, I know Trisha started touching on, there are other solutions beyond just finding formula. Obviously that's the ideal option for a lot of people because it's already formulated. Well, that's why it's called formula. It's got all the vitamins and everything that we can, but people didn't die on those older recipes. The way I like to think about it is it's kind of a sliding scale of how much of an emergency you're in.
I made the point on Facebook just that if you post about goat milk right now, you're going to find yourself being banned by their algorithms within about 4 to 7 years.
Yeah.
They'll come back and ban you. And I was just excoriated. And granted, didn't know anything about goat milk until she talked about it.
It is an option.
It just sort of goes into kind of the post-COVID hangover of anything that isn't FDA approved, you're a bad person for thinking about it.
Yeah.
I don't agree with that. Am I right or wrong or stupid? Sarah first.
I don't think you're stupid for that. I think that there's a lot of things that are not FDA approved that are helpful, especially in situations. FDA is, it's frustrating because it should be, you know, this seal of guarantee, and then everything else kind of be an at your own risk. But that's not the way they treat it. It's you can only use those things that are FDA approved. And if you even consider anything else, not only is it unacceptable, but, you know, you should be criminalized. I don't think it's dumb at all. There's a, like I said before, a sliding scale of, it's kind of like you have emergency food stores, but that's not necessarily what you're going to use, if you have fresh food available. However, if you run out of food and there's a shortage and you can't get any groceries at the store, well, you can be glad that you have this option of your dehydrated food that was in, you know, your 10-gallon bucket. The same kind of thing with goat's milk is not a bad option. A lot of kids survived on that. That was, you know, kind of a pre-formula option. There's some interesting paintings that you can find of kids literally nursing on goats, just like being held underneath a goat in order to drink milk, because it's the closest animal milk to human milk that we know of. But even then, it's missing some of the amino acids that we have, and it doesn't have quite as much carbohydrates. So it still had, you know, it's a subpar option. If you have the option of getting formula, definitely give your baby formula instead of goat's milk. If you have a toddler, actually goat's milk may be a perfectly fine option. Mm-hmm. After about 12 months, their guts are, you know, mature enough that you can switch away from breast milk and formula. But even things like, I know I've increased the amount of food that I give my baby. I had initially planned to wait like Reagan did and do baby led weaning closer to 6 months. So you wait until they have more of the skills to feed themselves readily. But in an effort to use less formula, our pediatrician had recommended you could feed him a little bit more purees a little earlier. It's something that his belly is able to handle, but because the texture is still easy enough, but you don't want to use that completely to replace formula. And if it came down to it, you can use toddler formula with slightly older kids.
I was gonna mention that because I use that for my daughter. I'm not a big cow's milk fan, and she's not super great at drinking her water. And I figure, you know, she eats table food very well, but I figured this was a good way for her to have something, you know, after I think she was probably like 14 months when we started doing that. I've noticed that disappearing. And I don't know the nutritional value, but I would assume that would probably be better than some kind of goat's milk blend because it has DHA and those kinds of things in it. But I would worry about a really young baby. Probably an 8 or 9 month old would probably be fine with it. But
usually you can, there's some modifications that you can make to it, adding some vitamin drops still to make it okay for kids over about 6 months. It's definitely kind of falls there. If you can't find formula, then toddler formula with some alterations is the next best thing. And then beyond that, you know, goat's milk is a good option. If you have to go to cow's milk for a day or two, it's not going to be the end of the world.
Reagan, what do you want to add there? Like what would you recommend?
Oh gosh. I really just think that in desperate times, that is best. And if you can't find it, then make it or modify something.
I think people are kind of reading this stuff going, oh, you're going to feed your kid goat's milk, but as if you're going to do it every meal for months. You're right. Probably going to do it for like a day until you can get some formula or, you know, like.
Exactly. Yeah, it's stopgap.
Right.
Yeah. And goat's milk has been used for years. And most people that I see use it will make their own formula with vitamins, and they'll usually talk to their pediatrician. But most of these people are rural area people because they have goat's milk.
People who use
what you have when you have it. And
Reagan's in the crunchiest circles imaginable.
I am in a very, very crunchy circle.
Yes.
All of my friends stopped breastfeeding around like their kids are 4.
She's like, what if I breastfed Squish till she was 8? I was
this
like,
this is before we were engaged. I was just trying to see if we'd stay around.
And the answer was no.
I was like, are you sure?
I mean,
it's so healthy.
After 2 years, I reclaim them.
Hey, there was one more thing I did want to, if we just on the economic impact of this. So a lot of people know that, you know, you've got Enfamil and Similac or whatever, but you actually have store brand generics, which are the same. They're made by the same companies, just put in a different container. And so a lot of parents that had to choose formula feeding, especially, you know, like single parents or low income families, would use that. That stuff's gone first. So mm-hmm. you're going from buying something that's $13.99 for a little container to $28 or $30 for a container. That doesn't feed a baby that's exclusively formula fed very long. And so I can't even imagine, you know, what they're doing, you know. It's become like 10 times more expensive and they can't find it. And if you can find Enfamil, you're going to buy it regardless of how expensive it is, you know?
All right. Well, let's start wrapping up here. All the children are probably about ready to wake up and get their various nourishments.
I can actually hear ours.
I was just marveling that mine's still down.
I know. I'm listening. Oh my gosh, you're still asleep.
It's too big to be a cat. Final thoughts and then shameless self-promotion. Let's start with Trisha. Final thoughts and then tell people where they can find you.
So final thoughts. I thought this was a great idea, especially we kind of had a good circle of libertarian women from different perspectives. So it was nice like talking to people that didn't scream at each other over something because this is such a hot topic. But number one, let's take the government out of this. Let's not praise the government for flying some things in a warplane that's not really going to solve the solution.
it'll solve the problems of a sinking poll numbers.
Yeah. I was going to say, because I think about that amount of formula and I don't know if that's really.
I don't know how effective that's going to be.
It doesn't seem like a lot. It's like, you know, it was kind of like those COVID tests. It was like, thanks.
Remember when they sent us 3 COVID tests and they didn't work?
But so find the best solution you can find out there. I'm a fan of choosing breastfeeding first, but if it doesn't work, don't feel any guilt. Do what's best for you. And ultimately, do what's best for your child, you know, and sometimes that is what's best for you. So, but you can find me, Trisha Stewart Mann, on Insta, I'm Trisha.Stewart, Facebook, Trisha Stewart Mann, TikTok, Ginger Archie. But you can find me on gingerarchiepodcast.com, or you can just go to the We Are Libertarians page and find some stuff there too.
Sarah?
The only final thoughts are that it's a really complex issue, and the most important thing is that you make sure that your babies get fed. And I think the best thing that the men can do in this situation is understand that it's a very difficult situation, and having strong opinions on it either way does not necessarily help.
Because you're probably ill-informed and haven't thought about it nearly half as much as she has.
Yeah, it's just as unhelpful to have a guy who's, you know, giving you a lot of crap for not being able to breastfeed well as it is for one who's just insisting, well, why don't you just give him formula? You know, take the time to understand that it's a really complex issue, and it's very emotional for a lot of women. So have some understanding for that.
Stand over them and scream at their breasts. It's not going to help.
It doesn't. So as far as shameless self-promotion, I don't have a whole lot lately because I've just been focusing on taking care of my son. But we've had talked hopefully about starting up a podcast to kind of discuss some of the challenges around libertarian parenting soon. So hopefully we'll be returning for more of that.
Perfect. Yep. And then Reagan.
Well, I think that for such an emotional situation and just everything, that the best thing that we can do is just look at the facts and pick the best option from our options, because there are options. There are different ways to work around it, maybe just for a day, maybe for a couple of weeks. But I see a lot of people obviously very upset about this, as I would be too and am. But we have to work together to find solutions. Shameless self-promotion. Reagan Marie Spangle on Instagram and Reagan Marie Spangle on Facebook.
All right. And you have my permission to add her. Go ahead. I'm just not saying that to be funny, guys. I don't know if I should add her, but it's okay.
We do anyway.
Yeah, I know. Well,
she's your independent person. There needs to be no permission.
Exactly. Yes. And it's fine with me. So, all right. Thank you all for joining us. We really do appreciate it. It's it was a great show, great information. Thank you to all three of you for being here, and thank you for watching. And tune in this coming week as we'll be talking a little bit about Bitcoin. So stay tuned for that. Thank you.